Live from E-Town Hall in the foothills of the Rocky Mountains, it's E-Town with this week's guests from Denver, Colorado, Esme Patterson, Achievement Award winner Doug Vilsack, and from New Zealand, Marlon Williams. I'm Helen Forster. Join me now in welcoming our host, Nick Forster.
Thank you, everybody. Welcome to E-Town Hall. Good to see you all. We're going to take a little break. We're going to put the news behind us. There's going to be no special investigators, no international crises, no porn stars, none of that for at least a while. Just music and some good stories. We have a couple of young artists with us this week. One couldn't have possibly come from anywhere closer growing up actually right here in Boulder. And one grew up almost 8,000 miles away in New Zealand. But they both listened to a ton of older music when they were getting started and before they started writing their own songs. So our first guest grew up in a little town. I think it's actually called Littleton. On the water, not far from Christchurch, the biggest city on the South Island of New Zealand. His mother painted to classical music in the house and choral music. And his dad was a punk rock musician who gave his young son one album a week to listen to and absorb before pulling it back and replacing it, which I thought was kind of interesting. As a teenager, he joined the choir of the Cathedral of the Blessed Sacrament and toured Europe. And then at 17, he started a band called The Unfaithful Ways. So you can see how quickly things change. And that band did really well, and things have gone well ever since, actually, literally. It's no surprise. He's a remarkable singer. And at the ripe age of 27, has already done a ton of stuff. Lots of touring, lots of recording. He just released his latest. It's called Make Way for Love. Please welcome from New Zealand, along with his band, Marlon Williams.
Thank you, Nick.
Hello, everybody.
Make way for love. Make way for love. When by design you are on your knees and no wealth of comfort to afford you, then share the wonder of the ages. Be calling to break your heart, but it was the sweetest thing I've ever done. I didn't need a plan, just needed a body. I played on the line and I won.
Marlon Williams, you really did write a breakup record, didn't you?
Yeah, I guess so. Looking back.
Yeah. Is it hard to keep singing those songs and kind of bring you back into that feeling night after night?
No, it's all kind of playful now.
Yeah.
You know? I think a lot of the weight went up with the writing, you know?
Yeah. It was a catharsis. You could kind of let go of all that stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And you wrote the record really quickly, as I understand, right?
Yeah. I mean, there were a few ideas that had been germinating for a while, but
yeah.
But the bulk of it was done in a three and a half weeks or so. Yeah.
Wild. I just have to say, and everybody says you're a remarkable singer. I understand you got your start in choir, and was it the kind of thing that was your idea or somebody else's idea to start singing in choir?
It was my idea, but for the wrong reasons initially. It was just to get out of class. As a 10-year-old, that first got me into a choir.
Right.
But, you know, I'm always looking for the softest way through things.
Yep, the easy path.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, you're in a pretty highly developed choir and you're touring in Europe as a teenager. And
Yeah, it got more exciting.
Yeah. did they teach you about vibrato as a singer? Was that something that came naturally to you, or was that something that you had people actually sort of train you when you were a kid?
They kind of had to train it out of me. You know, like it's there's still a lot going on in there.
Yeah.
You should have heard me about, 15 or 10 years ago. I think it maybe stemmed from growing up in a Maori household and like a native New Zealand household where, no one's afraid of vibrato in Maori culture. It's a real fundamental part of the way people sing. Yeah.
I didn't know that. You grew up in that traditional musical culture.
It was present. There were certain times throughout the year where we'd go down to the meeting house and just sing. And
wow.
And there was that kind of singing.
Is that something you still do or still know how to do or can share with us a little bit? Or what,
Wow. Over the top.
Yeah. Well, we think of that as Hawaiian music, but we know it's Maori music.
It was Hawaiian music for us too until we got back on the boat and sailing on down.
Yeah. That's so beautiful. Now, I just have to touch on this stuff because I think it was so interesting. Your mother was listening to classical music in your house while she painted, and your dad was a punk rock musician.
Yeah. Definitely was punk at heart.
Yeah.
All through my childhood.
And that story about him giving you a record a week and saying, here, spend a week with this, and then at the end of the week, we're going to swap it out. Is that true?
Yeah, totally.
It's
yeah.
such a genius idea.
Totally. Limit the input. You know, like.
No, I'm not going to give you 50 CDs.
No, it's hard today. Yeah. In this day and age, it's hard to limit
Dad,
that.
I got Spotify, Dad. Sorry. You know. But the idea is that he gave you the opportunity to really spend some time with a record. And then at the end of the week, would he ask you about it? You would just swap it out?
It sort of went on without any sort of talking,
Wow.
Just, he'd take the bus into town every Tuesday. The CD would be gone that morning, and there would be another one sitting on the desk at night.
Wild. And can you remember any that were sort of like, wow, this really blew my mind? Or
I remember the first one that I was desperately unhappy that it left after a week was Music from Big Pink by the band.
The band, yeah.
Yeah, that's wow. just such a world inside a record. And it's it felt like I'd been really taken out of a special place when that one left.
That's interesting. But I know I've seen videos of you singing, bluegrass songs and country songs. And so all of those styles and all of those things sort of sifted into your world as a young person?
Yeah. Funnily enough, when he took away the music from Big Pink, he brought a Gram Parsons CD home. I feel like Gram Parsons is a bit of a gateway drug into country music. You know?
Wow. Yeah, and some great stories too.
Yeah.
And probably you were drawn to the singers, like the Stanley Brothers and,
Yeah, Ralph Stanley very quickly became a favorite. And Keith Whitley singing with him. Like I still believe that Keith Whitley is the greatest singer ever to walk this earth, It's truly incredible.
Amazing.
Especially when, he left the band by the age of 21.
Right.
And the amount that he accomplished.
Yeah. Hey, in case you just tuned in, you're listening to E-Town. I'm here with Marlon Williams. When did you start writing songs?
I mean, I had a go when I was about 10 or 11. I remember trying to write a song in elementary school and it not going very well. I tried to write the song for a German exchange student who came to the girls' high school that was just down the road from our one. And it didn't work at all.
Didn't work.
Okay. So now I decided to write character songs. That's where I thought, I'm going to take myself out of this.
Right, it's too scary.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden you did that for a while and then you come back to now you're writing with your own self as the character and, stopped with this new record because it's your own breakup.
Yeah, exactly. It sort of forced its way in, I think.
Well, it's an interesting journey. And again, at 27 years old, you've had a lot of experience. You've digested a lot of music from all over, all different kinds of sources.
Yeah.
And then one last thing before we get back, I know that you've gotten a lot of recognition because you lived in Melbourne, you're native New Zealand. You're pretty well known there. Is it hard to kind of leave that and then come out to places where you're now just sort of introducing yourself to new audiences?
Not really. There's no point or no yardstick of recognition where I felt significantly happier than I did before at home.
Right.
So I enjoy every step along the journey. So it's exciting for me to come over here and be back a step because I enjoyed that step.
Yeah. Well, it's a great journey, and I know it's a long one, too. You've got a long tour here and a long tour in Europe, and it's a good couple of months before you're back home. So good luck on your route, on your whole tour, and let's get back to music.
All right.
Thanks a lot. Once again, welcome back, if you would, along with his band, Marlon Williams.
All right. Keeping in with the theme, I'm going to sing you a song now called Love is a Terrible Thing. And with a beautiful violin solo by the majestic Dave Kahn, he will step in. But here we go. Yeah. To see the sun go down is a heart made of gold. From the land, little children watch it burn. Fortune favors the cold. People tell me, boy, you got lucky, but I feel about as lucky as a snowman in the spring. It's mind over matter, head over heart. Love's a terrible thing.
Williams, along with his band, Gus Aggers on the drums and vocals, Dave Kahn, guitar and violin, Ben Woolley on the bass and vocals from New Zealand. The record is called Make Way for Love, out on Dead Oceans Records. They'll be back to play some more music later in the show.
Your visit to E-Town is made possible in part by Zayo Group, providing communication infrastructure services to the world's leading businesses with its fiber network that powers the voice, data, and video traffic we depend on every day. You can learn more at zayo.com. That's Zayo.com. By the Bohemian Foundation, building stronger communities through the Bohemian qualities of creativity and imagination. On the web at bohemianfoundation.org. And by our diverse family of NPR affiliates and community stations, plus college and commercial stations, as well as our international stations and podcast subscribers worldwide. Thank you for your continued support. You're listening to E-Town.
Nick Forster. You're listening to E-Town. Marlon Williams and his band will be back later on the show. And coming up, Esme Patterson is here, Boulder native singer that many of us have heard for a long time. Her first visit to E-Town. Before we get back to music, though, every week we get a chance to introduce you to someone that we get to know with the help of our listeners. People send us stories of folks who have inspired them in one way or another. And they're always just stories of people who look around and find a way to make small differences that generally add up. So we get to recognize them on the air with something called the Achievement Award, as you well know. And here comes Helen to tell you about this week's winner.
Thank you, my dear. Our Achievement Award winner this week is Doug Vilsack. Now, as a college student, Doug focused on conservation and natural resources management. After graduating, he was interested in the work being done in Africa around those areas. Well, a friend hooked him up with the head of the World Wildlife Fund, of all things, and through that connection, Doug got the opportunity to go to Namibia to help community conservation organizations there set up systems to aid them in their work. Well, while he was there, Doug couldn't help but notice a severe gap in access to energy in certain parts of the country. In particular, he was interested in helping farmers who had a special challenge, lighting their fields at night to keep elephants from destroying their crops. Now, out of that, the nonprofit program called Elephant Energy was born. Their work has quickly evolved into helping all kinds of people in all kinds of situations emerge from the dark. And Doug is here with us, so let's welcome him now, this week's Achievement Award winner, Doug Vilsack.
Hi, Doug. Welcome to E-Town.
Thanks for having me.
That is a crazy problem that I never thought of, elephants ransacking my crops. I never imagined people would think about that.
Elephants get hungry, and if they see a big crop full of corn or any other thing that they can eat, then they like getting in there and they eat it all up.
Wild.
So essentially, farmers, to protect their fields, need to go out and sleep in their fields in March and April when the corn's getting ripe. And so to do that, they need to feel comfortable doing that. And so you wouldn't go walking around in the dark in Africa without a light, and neither will they. And so it really helps facilitate them going and protecting their crops.
Mm-hmm. And so that simple challenge provided the opportunity to say, well, there must be a way to help them with solar lights.
Exactly.
And so what did you do then? What was the next step?
So this was back when I was in law school about 10 years ago. We just passed the bar exam and hit up about 50 of my friends, asked them for $10 a piece and bought 50 of these solar-powered lights. Put them in a backpack and flew down to Namibia, where I'd been a few times working with the World Wildlife Fund, and initially distributed those lights to game rangers, folks that worked in these conservation areas.
And then, and so they were, by example, able to show how this can make a difference, and then I suspect it became kind of a popular thing.
Exactly. And actually what happened was the program started out as a donation-based program, and we realized that people wanted to buy these products from us. And so the idea really transitioned more into a social venture, a way for us to spend our effort training up salespeople, importing these solar products into the country so that we weren't relying on handouts and handing out products to people. Instead, we were starting solar businesses.
Yeah. And because people probably value them more if they had some skin in the game, they had to pay something, they had to figure out a way to get one of these things, and they probably took better care of it.
Exactly. So we did do some of these charitable donations in the beginning, and it was just very stark. I mean, folks that received donated product wouldn't take care of it, and folks that had saved up their money over a period of months and invested into a product like this would actually take care of it.
And so it's spread, I assume, from beyond farmers.
It did. So it started just in the far northeastern corner of Namibia, a tiny little stick called Caprivi up there, and is spread all over the northern part of the country. It's a country twice the size of Texas with only 2 million people, so huge expanses of land. But we work in schools, we work with small businesses, kind of with anybody who might need light, which ends up being about everybody.
Yeah. So what kind of difference can something like that make in a school, for example?
So a lot of these kids go home at night and they're supposed to study and read books, but it's dark. And so, you can add 4 or 5 hours to the end of each day, not just for studying, but for cooking, doing all the things that you would normally do at night when it's dark. And it just really transformed people's lives.
Does it cut down on the use of fuel and other things that were both resource intensive and polluting?
It is. So people use candles, kerosene, and they spend a lot of money on that. And then they also use batteries for flashlights that are expensive as well. So it cuts down those costs, and then it cuts down, burning kerosene in your home as well.
Yeah. And what about technology? When you go into villages and so on, do people have cell phones? Do they have ways to communicate? Do they have ways of connecting with, you know, basic services like healthcare and things like that?
Everybody has a cell phone, but they can't charge them. And so in addition to light, one of the main issues that we deal with is having products that can charge a cell phone. And that's just a huge benefit for folks. I mean, you might live 5-10 miles away from the nearest outlet or electric grid. So having one of these lights that can not only light your home, but can also charge your cell phone and connect you with your relatives or connect you with the hospital nearby is very important.
Wow. So are you expanding beyond Namibia now? You've had the success there?
So we've expanded all throughout Namibia. We work a little bit in Zambia and have gone to Botswana a little bit as well. Mm-hmm. But we've also worked in the United States since 2010, working on the Navajo Nation in the Four Corners region here as well. A lot of the same issues down there.
Wild. It's amazing just to even think about that.
Yeah. Most people don't know there are 18,000 homes in the Navajo Nation, northeastern Arizona, northwestern New Mexico, that don't have electricity.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Amazing enough.
Yeah. So this is kind of a turnkey solution. You have these products, you can manufacture them at a reasonable price, you can sell them at a reasonable price.
Exactly. So I would say probably the greatest triumph of this work has been really transitioning a lot of the work in Namibia to Namibians. The same on the Navajo Nation. I mean, it's great to be a founder, but the reality is that the folks, our staff, you know, that have been with us for 5-7 years now really run the organization. And I think that's the thing I'm probably most proud of.
That's great. So is it self-sustaining or do you still rely on donations and contributions?
We rely on donations as well, www.elfinenergy.org, of course. But I think as opposed to a nonprofit that hands things out, a good chunk of our revenue comes from selling these products. We wouldn't be able to have nearly the impact that we have now if we had to raise all the money to hand out a product every year.
So, Doug, how much do these lights cost for the average family in Namibia? How much does it cost?
So it varies. Some of the most inexpensive cost about $7, and that's the amount people spend on candles or kerosene every month. And we also have been working to develop a technology to allow them to pay off their products over time. So if they want kind of a more aspirational product that can light up their whole home, but they don't have $50 to pay for it, they can now make micropayments with their cell phone and pay it off over a number of months, but still get access to the product.
And probably still not really dramatically changing their overhead because it was $7 a month anyway.
Exactly. They're saving money almost from day one because they're not spending money on candles and kerosene.
It's so wild. So the economics work both for the recipients and for the business. Again, it isn't entirely self-sustaining, but it is, you're absolutely making these things affordable in every way you can, and you're generating revenue and income for people who need it.
Exactly.
How many of these items do you think you've already distributed, as far as you can tell?
We've distributed 16,000 in Namibia and reached about 100,000 people. So 10 years, not too bad.
Yeah. So elephantenergy.org, and there's probably photos and testimonials and stories of the impact your work has had.
All sorts of good stuff.
Well, congratulations, Doug, and good luck in the future. It's a great, simple idea that's really working. So congratulations once again this week. Our award winner, Mr. Doug Vilsack, founder of Elephant Energy. And you can find out more about all that stuff at elephantenergy.org. Oh, and also Eagle Energy. What's that?
So that's the work we've done on the Navajo Nation.
Okay.
So very similar work on the Navajo Nation, again, amazingly enough, with folks that don't have electricity here in the United States.
Yeah. Well, congratulations, Doug. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Winner of this week's Sea Chimney Award, Doug Vilsack, founder of Elephant Energy and Eagle Energy. You can check that out on the web.
Now, if you're listening out there, we welcome your feedback and comments about this segment or the show in general. If you'd like to send us an award nomination or learn more about recent winners or listen to this week's entire interview again, all that and more is available on our website, etown.org. Or, as always, you can write to us the old-fashioned way at Box 954, Boulder, Colorado, 80306.
Thank you, Helen. Thanks, Doug. Marlon Williams and his band will be back in a little while to play some more music right now. Let me tell you about what's coming up next. Esme Patterson grew up here in Boulder, Colorado, in a pretty big family, including a pair of high-profile grandparents. She and her sister listened to all kinds of music, but R&B, I think mostly as kids. They joined forces in 2006 with another pair of siblings and others to form the band Paper Bird, an indie band that got its start following the New Belgium Tour de Fat, among other things, but they had a great run for a long time. Esme began writing more songs for herself, and by 2014, she left the band and continued to pursue her solo career. Along the way, she collaborated with some friends like Nathaniel Rateliff and Shaky Graves and lots of others. She now has her own band, and she tours a lot in between writing for some film and television projects. She's busy. Her latest is a more produced, more ethereal, and a little bit more abstract in some ways, but still sort of mining the same territory that she has as a songwriter for many years. Please welcome for her first visit to E-Town, Esme Patterson.
This song is called The Glow. It's from a concept record that I made that all the songs are responding to famous songs about women, and I would stand in that female character's perspective and tell another side of the story just for fun. And this is the song I wrote from the perspective of Caroline No by the Beach Boys, off of Pet Sounds. This is how I feel that Caroline might respond. One of the infinite ways she could.
Getting longer and the earth is spinning round and your heart is in your mouth, dear. You're gone but you never leave, and no one knows why but me.
So Esme Patterson, welcome to E-Town.
Thank you, yeah.
It's good to see you again. We crossed paths at the, was it the Winnipeg Folk Festival last
yeah,
summer?
They yeah, they say it Winnipeg.
Winnipeg, okay.
Which they corrected me. I was like, oh, Winnipeg, sorry.
That doesn't mean we have to say that.
I know. I try to observe the local customs wherever I go.
Well, it was cool to see you up there because it was a great mixture of all kinds of musical styles, and you were sort of holding your own in this community of like-minded young songwriters, and it was great, just sort of out of context. It was cool.
Thank you, yeah, cool.
Let me ask you a little bit about you as a kid. I understand that you listened to a lot of R&B records when you were little.
Yeah, my parents have great taste in music, and so we got lucky.
Yeah. And, you know, I know about your grandparents because your grandmother was well known. She ran a bookstore downtown, and your grandfather was both a Episcopal minister and also a sports announcer at the University of Colorado. Not a typical combination.
Yeah.
And the whole paper bird experience must have been a remarkable ride for you. And your sister, you know, you and your sister did that together, and that must have been a great journey.
I'm so grateful for that journey. That was really special, and I feel really grateful for all that time. Even though there were, you know, trials and tribulations, as happens. But it was a beautiful thing to be a part of.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your project, Woman to Woman.
Yeah. That one, it was a Townes Van Zandt song I was learning to play called Loretta. You guys know that song, Loretta? As I was learning how to play it, I was like, I hope none of my ex-boyfriends talk about me like this. Because, like, that's just their side of the story. And I had a whole other side of the story, and I wonder if anyone cares. And then I was doing this project, and I listened to all the songs that were named a woman's name. Mm-hmm. A lot of them were songs that I had loved, and I listened to it deeply and was changed by a deep listening of it. Like, what?
I think it's an ingenious idea, just to sort of, like, if they could answer.
Mm-hmm.
And then the latest project called We Were Wild.
Yes.
You spent more time making that record than you did on your earlier ones, right?
Yes, I did. My last record was really about the female experience. And the response to it was the very, like, this is a feminist record. And I was like, well, I just happened to be a woman and was talking about my experience, and everyone says it's a feminist thing, so apparently that's a stance. It's just being a woman. You're being political all of a sudden. And I had felt kind of bound up in that, mm-hmm. and was feeling the friction between intellect and instinct. And a lot of the songs are about that, so...
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, it's been an interesting journey for all of us to kind of dive in and listen to your songs and spend time with your records and get to know you from that perspective, because we've known you peripherally around town and we know your family a little, so it's cool to just dive in a little deeper.
Yeah.
So let's get back to more songs. Welcome back, if you would, Esme Patterson.
We're going to bring Nick and Helen Forrester back out on stage for this one on the E-Tones. It's so much fun to play with them. All right, this song's called No River. Sing along if you know it.
Okay.
Thanks, Helen.
Thank you.
'cause I'm no mountain. I can't sit still 'cause I'm no mountain. And I can't sit still forever. I'm no mountain.
Esme Patterson, along with Adam Baumeister, and the E-Tones, Chris Engelman, Christian Thiel, Ron Jolly, Helen Forster, Esme Patterson. We'll be back later on in the show.
This portion of E-Town is made possible by Silk, the charter sponsor of Change the Course. The program was co-created with National Geographic to restore water in critically water-stressed ecosystems. You can learn more about Silk's commitment to the environment and to plant-based nutrition at silk.com. And by the way, we love to hear from our listeners, so feel free to send us your comments about the show in general, about our Achievement Award stories, or our interview guests, or anything else you'd like. You can reach us either by email at info@etown.org or on Facebook. You're listening to E-Town.
I'm Nick Forster. You're listening to E-Town. I want to say hello to our listeners who are listening on stations like WNCS The Point in Burlington and Montpelier, Vermont. Thanks for tuning in on 101.9 Kink FM, uniquely Portland, up in Portland, Oregon, and on WFPK in Louisville, Kentucky. Great station in Louisville. Thanks for everybody for tuning in. As always, if you want more information about any of our guests, if you want to see exactly how tall Marlon Williams really is, all that stuff you can check out online at etown.org. We've got a little solar power goes a long way in Africa and other places where there is no electricity. Amazing young voice from New Zealand. We had a hometown girl makes good. All that stuff, our usual E-Town stew, and there's more. So right now, would you help me welcome back to the stage, along with his band from New Zealand, Marlon Williams.
Thanks, Nick.
Too late to tell you I'm gonna build a world around you. Too far, you're too far away for me to pull you in and show you just what I can do with a lover who tries. Are you talking to me? Words are twisting round the way again, making sins of all the secrets of your heart. Ooh.
Thanks.
It was a song called What's Chasing You. It's about wondering what's chasing somebody. This next song, it's called Nobody Gets What They Want Anymore. It's about cats.
Isn't it strange? Impossible to claim your reward. I cannot explain the motion I can barely afford to contain, and you're the same. You hide away from anything that turns you on. Nobody gets what they want anymore. No words on a screen could possibly protect you. You know what it means. Do is the choice. I place a ring around us and pray and pray and sing their name. There is no blame, there is no shame. I need you more. Anymore.
Marlon Williams, along with Gus Agars, Dave Kahn, and Ben Woolley, New Zealand. The record's called Make Way for Love. Marlon Williams. It's old, it's new. It's every time, it's everywhere. We've got time for one more song. We found a good one. I want to thank all our guests. Thanks to Esme Patterson and Adam Baumeister for coming out and playing some new songs and some old songs. Thanks to our award winner, Doug Vilsack, bringing solar lighting to communities around the world who have no electricity, literally changing lives for tens of thousands of people. Thanks to Marlon Williams and his band. Thanks to the E-Tones and Helen Forster. Thanks to Wilson Pickett for this next tune. Nick Forster, hope you can be with us next week, right here in E-Town.
If you need me, call me. If you need me, call me.
Don't wait too long. If things go wrong, I'll be home.
If you want me, send for me. If you want me, please send for me.
Don't wait too long. Just pick up your someday. But way deep down in my heart, I'm pretty sure I did the best that I could. And that's why I know that one of these same days, you come walking through that same old door, and I can imagine that these are the words that you might just be saying.
I still love you, always think of you.
E-Town's produced by a donor-supported nonprofit organization. To make an Achievement Award nomination or comment on the show in general, feel free to visit our website, etown.org, or contact us through Twitter or our two Facebook pages. Distribution of E-Town is made possible by our family of sponsors, this station, and listeners like you.
I still love you, always think of you. I still love you.
No matter what the
Esme, Adam, Marlon Williams and his band. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.
This is a production of the E-Town Radio Network.